of the need to be cleansed. "Well met again," he said, as the gang of four came up even with him out in the middle of the road. They turned as one to regard him, and he pulled back the cowl of his elven cloak to give them a clear view.
"You!"
exclaimed the one he'd earlier pained. Barabbas smiled and faded back into the alleyway. The four, three brandishing crude clubs, the fourth with a knife, rushed in after him, roaring in outrage and promising retribution, though one staggered more than rushed. Three of them entered the alley at full speed, not even realizing that Barabbas had only faded in a couple of steps and was in no way trying to get away from them. How the timbre of their obscenities changed when he appeared in their midst, all elbows and fists and flying feet. Just a few moments later, Barabbas the Gray walked out of the alley onto the dimly lit Neverwinter Street, and not a groan followed him forth. He felt better. He felt cleaner. Those four had deserved it. Chapter 4 The Host Tower's Secret.
"Dark elves," Dahlia said, seeming quite amused by the prospect. "So, it is true."
"Truer in the past," Dorcray replied. "They're more rare in the city these days, since Luskan has lost its luster as a trading port. But still they remain, or visit at least, advising the high captains and offering their wares."
"Interesting,"
Dahlia replied. But she was, in fact, losing interest in her lover's dissertation of the politics of the City of Sails. Dorcray had led her to a most unusual place, a cordoned-off area of ancient ruins overgrown with roots and the hulking remains of dead trees, like a long untended and decrepit garden.
"What is this place?"
she asked.
"Illusk," Dorcray replied. "The most ancient part of an ancient city. And more than that, Illusk is Luskan's barrier between the present and the past, between the living and the dead."
Dahlia took a deep breath, inhaling the heavy aroma of the air around her.
"Do you not feel it?" Dorcray asked. "You, who have lived at the edge of the dread ring of Zaz Tam, must sense the transition."
Dahlia nodded. She did indeed feel the damp chill, the smell of death, the sense of emptiness. Death, after all, was about all that she had known for the past decade of her life, continuously, personally, pervasively.
"It's a sweet thing,"
Dorcray whispered to her, his voice going husky as he moved near to her exposed neck.
"To walk in both realms."
Dahlia's eyelids felt heavy, and for a few heartbeats she was hardly aware of the vampire's approach. It was as if she smelled the invitation to the other realm permeating her very being. She popped open her eyes, and they flashed dangerously at the nearby vampire.
"If you bite me, I will utterly destroy you,"
she whispered, mimicking Dorcray's teasing tones. The vampire grinned and stepped back, remembering to bow once as he did. She shifted just a bit to show Dorcray the brooch she wore, the gift from Zaz Tam that granted her heightened powers against the undead. A vampire would prove a formidable opponent to any living warrior, but with that brooch and her own amazing physical discipline, Dahlia was quite capable of following through on her threat.
"Why did you bring me here?"
she asked.
"Behold the gateway to the Undercity," Dorcray explained, moving to a nearby ruin, a pile of broken stones scattered in a roughly circular pattern, as if they had once formed the rim of a well.
Dahlia hesitated and glanced across to the island that had once held the host tower of the Arcane, its rubble still clearly visible, and her expression remained doubtful.
"There are tunnels," Dorcray explained, "beneath the waves."
"You have been down there?"
The vampire smiled and nodded.
"It is where I seek my respite from the sunlight, a most remarkable place, and with a most remarkable hostess.
That last remark had Dahlia looking at the vampire with intrigue. Hostess? She asked.
Yes, an exquisite creature.
Do not mock me.
You will like Valindra Shadowmantle, the vampire promised.
With a flourish of his arms, Dorcray flipped his cloak up over his shoulders. He seemed to blur, and Dahlia had to momentarily look away as the vampire transformed into a large bat, which dived into the well, disappearing from sight. With a sigh, knowing Dorcray knew she couldn't easily follow, Dahlia slipped into the hole. She had her staff doubled into a 4-foot walking stick, and she spoke a quiet command and tapped it against the stone. Its folded end reacted to her command with flickering bursts of blue-white light. Down Dahlia went, staff in one hand, her free hand and 2 feet working fast to bring her down the well. After about 30 feet, the narrow shaft opened up below her, so she crouched as low as she could and poked her staff below, illuminating the chamber. The floor was barely a dozen feet below her, so she didn't even bother to squirm lower and hook her fingers to hang, but just folded up and dropped. She landed in a crouch and glanced all around to find Dorcray back in human form and waiting for her near another hole. Down they went again to a crossing corridor and through a door into a side chamber. Several staircases, ladders, and narrow chutes later, they came into a labyrinth of tunnels and corridors, ancient structures, walls and doors and broken stairs, the oldest incarnation of the city that had come to be known as Luskin.
That corridor, Dorcray indicated, pointing west, will take us out to the islands.
Dahlia walked over, leading with her illuminated walking stick, studying the walls and floor.
Along its ceiling you'll find a mystery of the host tower, Dorcray explained.
Dahlia opened her staff to its full length and allowed the crackling light to wander to the tip once more. Then she thrust it above her, nearly touching the remarkably high ceiling of the tunnel. What is it? She asked, running the staff tip along what seemed like veins in the ceiling.
Roots?
Dorcray asked as much as answered. Dahlia looked at him curiously, but recalled the tree-shaped appearance of the now-destroyed host tower of the Arcane. Then a hissing sound from the tunnel spun her around, staff at the ready as some undead beast rushed at her, its long tongue darting between pointy yellow teeth. Dahlia put her staff into a spin, but Dorcray intervened, stepping forward and lifting his hand toward the ghoul and staring at it intently. The ghoul slowed and stopped, staring back at the vampire, a greater being among the enigmatic pecking order of the undead. With a howl of protest, the stinking creature skulked back into the shadows the way it had come.
The catacombs are full of the ravenous things, Dorcray explained. Ghouls and lacedons, half-eaten zombies.
Lovely, Dahlia remarked, and she lamented that the undead seemed to follow her wherever she went.
Most are small, but there are at least 2 large ones, the vampire explained, turning his attention and the conversation back to the curious roots. Hollow tubes, one running out from the foundation of the ruined host tower to the open sea, the other running back inland to the east-southeast.
How far?
The vampire shrugged. Well beyond the city walls.
What magic is this?
Dahlia asked, lifting the light and peering again at the nearly translucent greenish tube and the streaks of red. Ancient.
Dahlia shot the vampire an unappreciative look.
If I had to guess, I'd say dwarven, Dorcray elaborated.
Dwarven? It's too delicate.
But the stonework around it is impeccable, all the way to the host tower's foundation stones, which certainly showed the mark of dwarf craftsmen.
You're asserting that the host tower of the Arcane, one of the most magnificent and magical structures in all of Faerun, a wizard's guild house from beyond the memory of the oldest elves, was made by dwarves?
I think it likely that dwarves worked with the ancient architects of the host tower, Dorcray replied, who were likely not dwarves but elves, I would guess, given the history of the region, and the tree-like shape of the place before its fall.
Talia didn't argue, though she suspected that more than a few humans would have needed to be involved to bring the elves and dwarves together.
Roots? Dahlia asked. And you think these are important?
She stopped, as she noticed some movement above, then screwed up her face curiously when she saw some kind of liquid sloshing through the tube above her.
The tide, Dorcray explained. When it rises, some water is forced along the tunnels. The roots, the veins, whatever you wish to call them. It's not much, though, and goes back out with the tide.
Dahlia had no idea what any of this surprising information might mean. She and Dorcray had come to Luskin to learn if the destruction of the host tower had anything to do with the earthquakes that had been racking the Sword Coast north since its fall. Magical wards had burst in the fall of the tower, it was said, and somehow, given the timing of the quakes, those wards affected not only Luskin, but the forested hills known as the Crags. She turned to follow the line of the strange route back to the southeast.
What else have you learned?
The warrior elf asked.
Come. I will take you to the Lich Valindra, and an older and more powerful being, or one who was more powerful before he was driven insane in the spell plague.
He started away, but Dahlia didn't immediately follow, silently recounting what she knew of the recent history of Luskin, something she had studied intently before leaving Thay.
Arklem Greek,
she asked, referring to the Lich who had once commanded the host tower in the name of the Arcane Brotherhood, and who had been defeated in its fall. Defeated, but not likely destroyed, she knew, for that was the manner of Liches, after all. Dorcray grinned, showing his approval.
A formidable foe, Dahlia warned. Even with Zastam's brooch protecting me.
Dorcray shook his head.
Once, perhaps, but no more. The drow have taken care of that matter for us.
A short while, and a dozen chambers and corridors later, the pair came into a strange room.
What is this place? Dahlia asked.
For it seemed more the drawing room of a fancy inn than a subterranean chamber amidst a network of damp caves. Colorful tapestries hung around the chamber, which was set with lavishly decorated and well-crafted furniture, including a marble-topped vanity with a large gold-gilded mirror set atop it.
"It is my home,"
said a woman seated on a delicate chair in front of that vanity. When she turned in her seat and smiled at the couple, Diana tried hard not to wince. She might have been beautiful, with long, lustrous black hair and delicate features, though what color her eyes might once have been was long lost to the red dots of a lich's unnatural inner fires. Her smile was a ghastly thing, for her gums had rotted back, making her teeth seem far too large, and her pallid skin seemed almost to crack as she smiled.
"Do you not like it?"
she asked sweetly, too sweetly, as if she was a young girl at play, perhaps.
"Oh, we do, Valindra, oh, we do!"
Dorcray said with exaggerated enthusiasm, before Dahlia could even begin to reply. The warrior looked to her vampire companion, then back at the lich.
"You are Valindra Showmantle?" she asked. "Why, yes, I am," Valindra replied. "I have heard stories of your greatness," Dahlia lied,
and Dorcray squeezed her hand in approval.
"But even those flattering tales greatly understated your beauty."
With that, Dahlia bowed low, while Valindra tittered and laughed.
"Where is your husband, good lady?"
Dorcray asked, and when Valindra spun as if looking for someone, Dorcray nodded his chin up toward a shelf on a glass-fronted hutch, where sat a most curious, skull-shaped gem the size of Valindra's fist. As they all considered that phylactery, the eyes of the skull flared red brightly for a moment before going soft once more.
"Grief is in there?"
Dahlia quietly asked her companion.
"What's left of him?"
the vampire replied.
He directed Dahlia's gaze the other way, to a second skull-shaped gem, which showed no life within its smoky white crystal.
"Valindra's phylactery," Dorcray explained.
Dahlia felt at the brooch on her vest as she considered the gems. She dared walk over to the hutch, and noting that Valindra still smiled stupidly, she dared to open the door. Dahlia glanced back at Dorcray, who held up his hands, having no answer.
"A most beautiful gemstone," Dahlia said to Valindra. "It's my husband's,"
the lich replied.
"May I hold it?" "Oh, please do," said Valindra.
Dahlia wasn't sure if that sweetness was from her apparent simple-mindedness, or if it was an enthusiastic prodding for more nefarious reasons. Holding the phylactery of a disembodied lich, after all, was reputedly the easiest way to get oneself possessed. But Dahlia wore Zastam's brooch, which offered great protection from such necromancy, and so she took the gemstone in her hand. Almost immediately she felt the rush of confusion, anger, and terror contained within that gemstone. She knew it was Arklem Greith, and would have, even if Dorcray hadn't told her so, for the lich screamed at her to release him and to kill someone named Robillard. She saw flashes of the glory that had been host tower of the Arcane, for Arklem Greith had been its final master. So many images assaulted her, so many discordant thoughts flickered in her consciousness. She felt herself being drawn into the inviting depths of the gemstone. She began to wonder where Dahlia ended, and Arklem Greith began. In a flicker of recognition, Dahlia dropped the skull gem back onto the shelf and quickly stepped back, gasping for breath and trying hard to hold her composure.
"Your husband has a magnificent gemstone, Valindra," she said. "Oh, but he does, and mine is no less wondrous,"
the lich answered, and her voice sounded different then, husky, threatening, sober. Dahlia turned on her.
"Why are you here?"
Valindra asked.
"Did Camuriel send you?" "Camuriel?"
Dahlia asked, looking more at Dorcray than the lich.
"One of the leaders of the Dark Elves in Luskan," the vampire explained.
"Where is he?"
Dahlia asked.
"He went home,"
Valindra unexpectedly answered, her voice full of regret.
"Far, far away. I miss him. He helps me."
The warrior and the vampire exchanged curious glances.
"He helps me remember,"
Valindra went on.
"He helps my husband." "Did he give you the gemstones?"
Dahlia asked.
"No, that was Jarlaxle,"
Valindra answered,
"and the stupid dwarf."
Dahlia looked to Dorcray, who shook his head, then back at Valindra.
"Bwa-ha-ha!"
Valindra erupted, ending with a sour expression and an even more sour sigh.
"Stupid dwarf!" "So, Jarlaxle is a dwarf?"
"No,"
said Valindra, seeming quite amused by that notion.
"He is drow, handsome and clever."
"And he is in Luskan, sometimes."
"No. I...
The lich's eyes darted around, seeming at a loss. Dahlia looked to Dorcray, who had no answers.
"What do you know of the host tower?"
she asked the lich.
"I lived there once for a long time."
"Yes, then it was destroyed."
The lich turned away, throwing her arm up across her eyes.
"It fell! Oh, it fell!"
"And its magic was broken?" Dahlia pressed, moving near to the distraught woman. She asked again, and when Valindra looked at her blankly, she rephrased the question several different ways. But it was soon obvious that the lich had no idea what she might be talking about.
So Dahlia wisely shifted the conversation to other more mundane things, then to the topic of Valindra's beauty once more, something that seemed to calm the undead woman. After some time, she asked,
"May I visit you again, Valindra?"
"I do so enjoy company,"
the lich replied.
"But tell me before that I might prepare."
She paused and looked around, and appeared increasingly distressed.
"Where is my food?"
Valindra asked, and she looked at Dahlia curiously. Then she threw her hands up over her face and fell back with a great wail.
Dahlia moved toward her, but the lich thrust one hand forward to keep the elf warrior away.
"My food," she said.
Then she began to laugh.
"I will bring you some food," Dahlia promised,
and Valindra laughed all the louder.
"I need no such sustenance," the lich replied. "Not for so many years now, not since the host tower fell."
She looked at Dahlia with a sad grin.
"Not since I died."
She seemed to calm then, and Dahlia retreated to stand by Dorcray.
"I forget sometimes,"
Valindra explained, her voice sober once more.
"It is so lonely."
She cast her longing gaze at the skull gem phylactery of her husband.
"Then you would welcome us back?"
Dahlia asked. Valindra nodded. Dahlia motioned for Dorcray to follow and started out of the room.
"But no food,"
Valindra called after her.
"There are still answers to be found down there," Dorcray said when they were away. "In the roots of the host tower, if not in Valindra's home."
"There are answers to be found in there as well."
"I doubt she knows much of the host tower's origins, or wards."
"But Arklem Greith may well know,"
Dahlia assured him.
"I would speak with him again."
"You spoke with him? When you held the gem, it is not wise."
"Short conversations," Dahlia promised with a grin. "It's near dawn now. I'm going back to the city. I have an audience with Borlan the Crow, one of the High Captains. Perhaps he will tell me more of these drow, this Camuriel and Jarlaxle."
"And I?"
"Follow the inland route of the host tower," Dahlia ordered. "I would know where it goes."
Dorcray nodded.
"I will return to Valindra tomorrow night, and every night thereafter. Join us as soon as you can."
"Should I escort you up?" asked the vampire. Dahlia just looked at him. "Ghouls, ghasts, and other beasts," Dorcray started to explain. He stopped when Dahlia stared at him as though he'd lost his mind at long last, and she took up her fighting staff. Before the next dawn, Dahlia hung by one arm from the bottom lip of the uppermost well, peering into the chamber below. She slowly turned, scanning the room for the undead she knew were there, but knew she wouldn't see. They could see her, hanging up high, her walking stick sparking with blue light, but it didn't matter. Even if she'd come down in complete darkness and as silent as a shadow, they would know. They would smell her. The aroma of her sweet, living flesh would almost overwhelm them. Dahlia dropped to the floor below, springing open her staff as she descended. She landed in a crouch and hopped in circles. There were too many. Out they came in a swarm, from every exit and every shadow, ravenous ghouls, hunched low, running on all fours, their long nails scratching against the stone. They appeared as emaciated human corpses, gray skin stretched over skull and bones. But there was more to them than that. Claws and teeth and a hatred for all things living and a hunger for all flesh, alive or dead. There was a score of them at least, and Dahlia had nowhere to run to gain a more defensible position. But neither did they. She sprang straight up, inverting, with her hands set firmly at the top of her planted staff. She straightened upside down, thrusting her legs back inside the well. She snapped her legs out wide to the sides, locking them against the sides of the well, and bent up, hand walking her staff before her, until she turned upright back in the well, with the swarm of ghouls below her. Enjoy this, she whispered to the ghouls, and she tugged a ruby gemstone free from her necklace and dropped it. It exploded the moment it hit the floor, flames rolling out in every direction, nearly reaching back up into the well with Dahlia. With her legs still locking her firmly in place, the warrior clapped her hands over her ears to diminish the awful keening below. The fireball lasted only a heartbeat, a single, devastating gout of flames, but the sting remained, fires clinging to the ghoul's skin, eating hungrily. They shrieked and screamed in high-pitched, otherworldly voices, hellish calls befitting the abyss itself. They ran about madly, arms flailing to chase the biting flames away, claws slashing to keep their insane companions at bay, for indeed some jumped upon others and began chewing and tearing at undead flesh, at anything that might make the pain stop. In the midst of that insanity, Dahlia dropped back to the floor, releasing 2-foot lengths at the ends of her 4-foot center pole. She had those outer poles spinning even as she landed, and she came right out of her crouch and pivoted left, launching a strike that caved in the skull of the nearest undead beast. They were too agonized, too agitated and insane to coordinate their movements against her, and Dahlia waded through them. Every reaching arm shattered under the weight of her spinning staff. Any ghoul's face that got too near to her felt the butt end of Koza's needle's center pole. She sprinted clear, down a tunnel, and when she heard pursuit, she broke the center pole apart and set her 2 weapons into coordinated motion, building momentum. The ghouls neared, a pair of them, she believed. Dahlia rounded a corner, her free pole spinning furiously at her sides, back to front. Then, on 1 turn, she flipped her wrists under, bringing that spin even tighter so that the poles came up into her armpits, where she locked them tight. And she never eased the pull from those front poles in her hands right before her, up and angled away, straining to pull their ends free. Dahlia growled and tightened every muscle in her body, it seemed, straining greatly to hold the back poles in place while at the same time straining to yank them free. She leaped out at the last moment to face the pursuing ghouls, and at that instant lifted her elbows. The poles shot forward with tremendous force, each flying like a spear into the ugly face of a surprised ghoul. The sickening splat of their butt ends cracking through skulls, one sounding wetter as it drove right through a ghoul's eye, came as sweet music to the elf. Everything seemed to freeze in place at that moment. Dahlia and the ghouls holding that macabre pose for what seemed like many heartbeats. The elf woman exploded into action again, tugging the ends free of the ghoul's already rotten brains. They snapped straight back behind her own head, where she shifted her hands ever so slightly to use that momentum to put them into reverse spins at her sides. Then overhead with her right hand and down and across to smash the side of the skull of the ghoul on her left. At the same time, her left hand went up over her head and followed the same path as the first, only left to right, and that other ghoul's head snapped to the side as it flew against the wall and crumbled into a dead heap. Dahlia casually set the poles into motion again and stared back the way she'd come, though even with her keen elf vision, she couldn't see much. But there was no pursuit. She reformed her staff and buckled it once more into a single walking stick, then tapped it on the stone to bring forth the flickering blue light.
Ah, Valindra Shadowmantle, she whispered as she started away. I do hope you're worth all this trouble.
Dorcray was a vampire, and a vampire couldn't sweat, of course. But still he felt the moisture all over his body, his clothes clinging uncomfortably to him. Normally, Dorcray wouldn't have needed a light to navigate subterranean chambers, but his complete inability to see anything piqued his curiosity. He brought forth a candle and some flint and steel, and when the wick finally caught, the vampire peered around even more curiously. He was in a wide, high chamber, as he had suspected, but he still couldn't see very much at all, just an opaque wall of steam brightened by his pitiful candle.
What is this place? He whispered to himself.
He had passed into a chamber full of steam that smelled like piles of rotten eggs, and that hissed as if he'd entered a pit of vipers. He'd traveled many miles from Luskin after several days following the inland route of the fallen host tower. The tunnels were of dwarven craftsmanship, surely, though it was obvious to Dorcray that no dwarves had been there in a long, long time.
He kept the candle burning, though it was all but useless, and slowly navigated the chamber. He moved toward one hissing sound and found it to be a vent in the floor, a crack in the stone through which poured more hot steam, and the awful smell only worsened. He found no other easy exit from the chamber, but his eyes widened with surprise when he noted that the root of the host tower did not continue through it, but snaked down one wall and disappeared through the floor. The vampire smiled, thinking his journey at its end. He blew out the candle and became as insubstantial as the steam around him. The vampire flowed through a crack in the floor, descending beside the root. Several days later, somewhat shaken but thoroughly intrigued, Dorcray arrived once more in the chambers of Valindra Shadowmantle. The Queen of Luskin's underworld had many candles burning and seemed more animated than usual, more lucid. She greeted Dorcray pleasantly, even expressing her regret at not having seen him for a 10-day.
"I followed the route of the Host Tower," he explained. "You remember the Host Tower?"
"Of course."
"You know the place? The grand hall where it disappears under the ground?"
"She has no answers for you," came another voice.
Dahlia stepped into sight from around one of the many decorative screens set about the chamber. She gave a little grin and nodded toward the skull gem on the shelf, the one inhabited by the spirit of Arklem Grief.
"But he does."
"You've been?"
"Tell me of this grand hall."
"It's a most remarkable place, as big as some cities in the under—"
"Gontalgrim,"
Dahlia interrupted, and Dorcray looked at her, obviously not understanding.
"The ancient homeland of the Delzoon dwarves,"
Dahlia explained.
"Long lost. Some consider it a myth."
"It is real," said Dorcray.
"You explored it?"
"I was turned away before I could get too far."
Dahlia looked at him with one eyebrow raised.
"Ghosts," the vampire explained. "Dwarf ghosts, and darker things. I thought it prudent to return to you with what I had unearthed." "What did you call it, Gontalgrim? How can you know?"
"Greith told me. The Host Tower was tied to that most ancient of dwarven cities, and was built by dwarves, elves, and humans in a long-ago age, and for the benefit of all, though few dwarves ever lived in the Host Tower itself."
"But its power benefited this city, this Gontalgrim?"
Dahlia crossed the room, shrugging as she went.
"I would expect as much. Arklem Greith knows little more, or at least I could discern little more, though I will try again soon enough. He is old. Not that old, of course, but he seems confident of the work, masonry and magical, that built the Host Tower of the Arcane, and that it was indeed somehow tied to—"
Her words trailed off as she noticed the puzzled look upon Dorcray's face.
"You wear two diamonds again in your right ear," the vampire explained. "Eight in your left and two again in your right."
"Surely you cannot be jealous,"
Dahlia replied.
"Borlan the Crow needed incentive, I expect."
Dahlia merely smiled.
"Jealous?" Dorcray replied then with a laugh. "Relieved would be a better word. Better another in your right ear than you come to believe your left might look better with nine."
Dahlia stared at him for a very long time, and the vampire feared that perhaps he hadn't been wise to tip her off to the fact that he understood the significance of her jewelry.
"We know where to look now,"
Dahlia said after a very long and uncomfortable silence.
"I will continue my work with Arklem Grief, gaining whatever insight he has to offer, and you must gather as much information as can be found about Gontalgrim, or of how we might navigate its wards, like these ghosts you speak of."
"It's a dangerous road," the vampire replied. "Were I trapped in this physical body, I would have had to fight my way in, and fight my way out against formidable foes."
"Then we will find even more formidable allies,"
Dahlia promised.
Chapter 5 A Drow and His Dwarf. Were it not for the morning stars set diagonally across his back, their glass-steel heads bobbing with every stride, Athrogate might have struck passers-by as a diplomat rather than a warrior. His thick black hair was well kept, and his long beard was neatly tied into three thick braids set with shining onyx gems. He wore another onyx, a magical one, set into a circlet on his head, and his broad belt, dyed black, imbued him with great strength. Black boots showed the scuffs of 1,000 mountains and 1,000 trails. The rest of his clothing was of the finest cut in style. Breeches of deep gray velvet, a shirt the color of the darkest of amethysts, and a black leather vest that served as a harness for the mighty weapons strapped to his back. He was a common sight in Luskan, and his shadowy relationship with the Dark Elves was the worst-kept secret in the City of Sails. But Athrogate walked the streets openly and often, in appearance at least, alone. It was almost as if he was inviting some opportunist to take a try at killing him, and the dwarf liked nothing more than a good row, though that pleasure had been hard to find of late. His partner frowned upon it. He walked to the corner of a building across the street from his favorite pub, Bite of the Shark, an apt name for anyone who had ever sampled the establishment's private stock of Gutbuster. At the corner of an alley, Athrogate put his back against the wall and took out a huge and curvy pipe and began tapping down his pipeweed. He was well into his smoke, blowing rings that drifted lazily over the street, when a striking elf woman exited Bite of the Shark and paused near a gathering of drunks who began throwing suggestive, lewd comments her way.
"Ye see her, then?"
the dwarf said out of the corner of his mouth, pipe still firmly in place.
"Hard to miss that one,"
a voice answered from the shadows beside him. With a suggestive cut of her skirt, the high black boots on her shapely legs, the low cut of her blouse, and a striking black and red braid. His words seemed a great understatement.
"Aye, and I'm bettin', sure as the sun's settin', that one of them fools'll go for her jewels. And oh, then they'll know in the heartbeats to come that her sticks'll play skulls with the sound of a drum."
The voice in the shadows sighed.
"Never gets old, does it?"
Athrogate asked, quite pleased with himself.
"Never was young, dwarf," came the reply,
and Athrogate bellowed, "Bwa-ha-ha!"
"Someday, perhaps, I'll come to understand how your thoughts flow, and on that day, I fear, I'll have to kill myself."
"What's to know?" Athrogate asked. "One of them'll go too far with her, and she'll put the lot of them on the ground."
As he posited that very thing, one of the drunks stepped toward the elf and reached for her buttocks. She neatly dodged and smiled at him, wagging her finger and warding him away. But he came on.
"Here it comes," Athrogate predicted.
The man seemed to fall over in a hug, from the vantage point of the dwarf and his companion at least, but when the dwarf started congratulating himself on being right, the voice in the shadows pointed out that the drunk was up on his tiptoes. He started to turn slowly, the woman coming around to put her back to the open street. The elf had spun her walking stick and poked it up as he came at her, locking its tip under his chin and driving him up to his toes. She was still smiling sweetly and whispering to the man in tones so low his companions apparently couldn't hear, and she had angled the ruffian so they couldn't see her walking stick either. She released him and stepped away, and the man staggered and nearly tumbled, then reached up and grabbed his chin, coughing to accompany his friend's laughter.
"Bah, I thought she'd deck 'em all," Athrogate grumbled.
"She's too smart for that," said the voice in the darkness. "Though if they pursue her now, she'd be more than justified in putting that weapon of hers to good use."
There was no pursuit, however, and the elf made her way up the road toward Athrogate.
"She's seen you," the voice commented.
The dwarf blew another smoke ring and walked across the alley and continued on his way, his work done.
The elf moved up to where the dwarf had been standing, and with a quick and subtle glance both ways, slipped into the alley.
"Jarlaxle, I presume,"
she said, when she saw the drow standing before her, with his great, wide-brimmed feathered hat and purple jodhpurs, his flamboyant white shirt opened low on his black-skinned chest, and his assortment of rings and other glittering accessories.
"I like your hat, Lady Dahlia,"
Jarlaxle replied with a bow.
"Not as ostentatious as your own, perhaps," Dahlia replied, "but it gets the attention of those I wish attentive."
"Austin," Jarlaxle stammered as if wounded.
"Perhaps I use mine to distract the attention of those I wish to harm." "I have other ways of doing that,"
Dahlia was quick to answer, and Jarlaxle found himself smiling.
"That is quite an unusual companion you keep,"
Dahlia went on.
"A drow and a dwarf side by side."
"We are anything but common," Jarlaxle assured her. He grinned again, thinking of another pair he knew, drow and dwarf, who had forged an amazing friendship over many decades.
"But yes, Atherogate is an unusual creature, to be sure. Perhaps that is why I find him interesting, even endearing. His words do not match the cut of his clothing."
"If one can call bwa-ha-ha words," Jarlaxle replied. "Trust me when I tell you that I have civilized him beyond my wildest expectations, less spit and more polish."
"But have you tamed him?"
"Impossible," Jarlaxle assured her. "That one could fight a titan."
"We'll need that."
"So Atherogate has told me. Has he told me that you found a place of great dwarven treasures, an ancient homeland?"
"You sound skeptical."
"Why would you come to me? Why would an elf seek the alliance of a drow?"
"Because I need allies in this endeavor. It's a dangerous road, and underground at that. As I've considered the powers that be in Luskan, it seems that the dark elves are more reliable than the high captains or the pirates. And that leaves me with you."
Jarlaxle's expression remained unconvinced.
"Because the place is thick with dwarf ghosts,"
Dahlia admitted. "Ah," said the drow. "You need a dwarf most of all, one who can speak to his ancestors and keep the hordes at bay." The elf shrugged, not denying it.
"I'm offering you 50% of the take," she said, "and I expect that to be considerable."
"Which 50?" It was Dahlia's turn to wear a puzzled expression. "You take the mithril, and I get a mound of copper coins," Jarlaxle explained. "I'll take 50, but my preferred 50.
1 to 1, Dahlia argued,
meeting alternating picks on the booty. "And I pick first."
"And I second and third."
"Second and fourth."
"Second and third,"
Dahlia demanded. "Have a fine journey," Jarlaxle replied, and he tipped his hat and started away.
"Second and fourth, then,"
the elf agreed before he'd gone 3 steps.
"Yes, I need you," she admitted, as the drow turned back to regard her. "I spent months uncovering this place, and 10 days more narrowing down my first choice as guide."
"First choice?" Jarlaxle said.
"First choice," Dahlia replied.
And again the drow wore that doubting expression. "Not Borlan the Crow?" Jarlaxle asked with a derisive snort. "Do you truly believe that one as striking as you can move about the city unseen?"
"Borlan served in the search, but was never the goal of it,"
Dahlia replied.
"I'd sooner take the drunks down the street with me."
She returned the drow's sly grin.
"He doesn't think much of you, by the way, or of your many black-sinned comrades. He takes great pride in having driven you from the city of Sales."
"Is that what you believe?" The elf didn't answer. "That I am driven from the very city I now stand within?" Jarlaxle elaborated. "Or that my associates would fear the wrath of Borlan the Crow, or any of the High Captains, or all of the High Captains, should they band together against us? Which they would never do, of course.
It would not take much of a bribe to turn two of them against the other three, or three of them against the other two, or four of them against Borlan, if that was the course we wished. Do you, who claim to have learned the secrets of power in Luskan, doubt that?
Dahlia considered his claims for a moment, then replied, And yet, by all accounts, drow are more scarce in the city of late.
Because we've used it up. We long ago emptied Luskan of all the treasures that interested us. We remain in the shadows, for the city remains a marginally useful source of information. Some ships still dock here, and from every port on the Sword Coast.
And so, Borlan the Crow and the other High Captains are the true power after all.
If it serves us for them to believe so, then let it be so.
That reply had Dahlia shifting uncomfortably for the first time, Jarlaxle noted, though she did well to hide it. He would have to play his hand carefully with her. She had ulterior motives, and he didn't want to scare her off by making her fear that she would be getting herself in too far over her head with him. Still, the elf intrigued him, and the mere fact that she had so beautifully and thoughtfully engaged Athrogate to get to him showed him that she was not ill-prepared in anything she did, he presumed.
"My associates' interest in Luskan are minor in these times," Jarlaxle clarified. "Their network is vast, and this but a minor endeavor."
"Their network?"
"Our network, when it serves me," Jarlaxle replied.
"And my proposition?"
The drow pulled off his great hat and swept a low bow before her.
"Jarlaxle at your service, dear lady," he said.
"Jarlaxle and Athrogate," Dahlia corrected. "I need him more than I need you."
Jarlaxle straightened and met her stern gaze with a wicked little grin.
"I doubt that."
"Don't," she said.
And she walked out of the alley. Carefully scrutinizing her every alluring movement as she walked away, Jarlaxle's grin only widened.
"The power in the west mounts," Sylora said to Zastam. "The tremors grow stronger. There is great danger and great potential to be found there."
"You have spoken with our agent?"
Sylora propped the mirror she carried up before her and closed her eyes, bringing forth its scrying magic once more. The shiny glass dulled, as if with a mist within, and only a small circle in the middle of the looking glass cleared. It no longer showed the reflection of the dread ring, but a clear image of a single object, a skull-shaped crystal.
"There is much more to the skull gem than to serve as phylactery for a lich," Sylora explained. "It serves me as conduit to our agent, and when the time comes, as a guide on my journey."
"You wish to leave at once?"
"It would have been better had I gone instead of Dahlia," the Thane sorceress replied.
"You question me?"
"Never winter is thick with Netherese."
"A cult of the upstart Asmodeus is there, at my bidding, to trouble them.
But not to defeat them. There is a dread ring to be created, to be forged from the secrets that Dahlia seeks to uncover, a power of uncontrollable catastrophe and exquisite beauty."
"More credit to Dahlia, then," Zastam reminded. "It was she who identified the signs of approaching peril and sought to exploit them."
"They are beyond her," Sylora insisted.
She could hardly see Zastam through the haze of ash in the dread ring, and that was a good thing, given the Archlich's horrid features, but it seemed to her as though his posture showed indifference to her excitement.
"Dahlia is not alone," Zastam assured her. "She thinks she is, and that is to our benefit. It is my hope that she will need us not at all to accomplish what she has set out to do. But you will watch her, and you will know, and we will support her as we deem necessary."
"Am I to travel to Neverwinter Wood, as we discussed?" Sylora asked, not willing to push any further.
She knew when Zastam had heard enough, and knew, too, that arguing with him was a sure way to be invited into his dark realm, as a slave.
Not yet, Zastam instructed. The cult, the Ashmadai, will keep our Netherese friends occupied. The greater prize will come from Dahlia's work. So I would have you learn as much as you can, both through your work here in our libraries and through your regular contact with our agent. This is of utmost importance. Should we succeed, we will have another dread ring, and better. It will come in no small part through the suffering of those ancient relics, the Netherese.
This is my charge?
It is.
And my credit?
The wizard pressed.
In your rivalry with Dahlia?
Zastam responded with a sly cackle, one that ended abruptly as he continued, his tone much more severe.
Dahlia suspected the link between the rising catastrophe and the fall of the host tower of the Arcane, not you. She has performed wonderfully, though it pains you to admit that. My suggestion to you is that you perform equally as wonderfully, for our greater purpose and for your own well-being. I have granted you this opening for redemption and excellence because of your history with Dahlia. If anyone in Faerun will watch over that one's every movement, it is you. But you serve me, Sylora, Zastam reminded. You serve my ends and not your own, or your own will come quickly, I assure you. My desire is that Dahlia succeeds, and you will work toward that end. Our enemies are the Shadowvar.
His tone left no room for debate.
Yes, your omnipotence,
Sylora replied, dipping her head in a scant bow.
Sylora's only comfort then was her deep-rooted belief that Dahlia was far too young and inexperienced, and far too dedicated, to succeed in the facilitation of the needed catastrophe. The wizard hoarded the very real possibility, indeed the probability, that she would have to rescue Zastam's victory in the West. Then, she hoped, the Arch-Lich would come to see the true limitations of that wretched elf.
Boar boy, really? Athrogate asked with a snicker for the 10th time since he and Jarlaxle had watched Dahlia enter High Captain Borlan's keep. The slim stone tower, known as Crow's Nest, had been only recently erected on Luskin's Close Guard Island, where the river Mirar spilled out into the trackless sea. Jarlaxle continued his amusement at the dwarf's use of the derogatory nickname so many in Luskin had tagged on High Captain Borlan. He possessed his father's title and the magical cloak of the raven handed down to him from his grandfather Kensadan. But there, at least according to the old sea dogs haunting Luskin's allies, the resemblance ended.
Skinny little runt, Athrogate remarked.
As was Kensadan, Jarlaxle replied, but possessed of a presence that could fill a room.
Yeah, I'm remembering that one. Tough old bird.
Pwahaha, bird, eh?
I understood you. Then why ain't ye laughing? Figure it out.
The dwarf shook his head and muttered something about finding a companion with a sense of humor.
Ye think she's laying down for him? Athrogate asked after a while. Dahlia uses every weapon to her advantage, of that I am certain.
But for that one, Boar Boy?
Surely you're not jealous over an elf,
Jarlaxle remarked with eyebrows raised.
Bah!
The dwarf snorted.
Ain't nothing like that, ye fool.
He paused and put his hands on his hips as he looked at a candle-lit window high up the moss-covered walls of Crow's Nest. Athrogate gave a little sigh.
Though I'd have to be a dead dwarf not to see the fight and fun in that one.
Jarlaxle gave a wry little grin, but let it go at that. Like the dwarf, he stood staring at the keep. Nothing seemed amiss for a long while. But then, from the window came a shriek that sounded like the excited screech of a giant crow. Both dwarf and drow came forward a step, peering more intently at that lone window. And the candlelight was snuffed all at once. Men began rushing around the compound, and another pair of shrieks sounded along with a blue-white flicker from behind the window, like the sudden flash of a lightning bolt. Then came a still louder screech, a brighter flash, and a report of thunder that shook the ground beneath their feet.
The window exploded outward, glass shattering and flying, and along with it, black feathers.
Athrogate emitted a strange gulping sound, then blew it out with a "bwa-ha-ha!"
Across the way, a giant black bird dived out the window, opened wide its wings, and floated across the compound, over the water, and dived to the ground right in front of Jarlaxle and Athrogate. Before either dwarf or drow could say a word, the crow disguise flipped back into a fine glossy cloak to reveal its new owner.
"Let us be quick," Dahlia said to the pair,
walking past and fiddling with one of the two earrings in her right ear as she did. Borlan was a minor nuisance, but the murderous arms of his house are long.
"Be quick for where?"
Athrogate asked, but Dahlia didn't slow.
"Elusk,"
Jarlaxle answered before she could, and with one glance back at the compound, the drow started away, sweeping the dwarf along beside him.
"And the Undercity."
The stunned Athrogate mumbled and muttered, chortled and giggled, before finally remarking,
"Bet Borboy wishes you'd left last night."
Corvin Dorcray paced about Valindra Shadowmantle's decorated chamber. He stopped and stared into a large mirror, and imagined the reflection he once saw in such a glass, trying to use those memories of his past life as a distraction. It didn't work. He thought of Dahlia again soon enough, waiting for her to return with Jarlaxle and the dwarf. She had gone to see Borlan the Crow, her newest diamond, her newest lover. Surely Dorcray wasn't jealous of that. He cared not at all for such petty issues as sex, but there remained implications for him in the elf's promiscuity. The vampire ran his hand through his black hair, and could clearly picture the movement in the mirror, though of course the glass showed no image. Borlan was Dahlia's 10th lover, 10 he knew about anyway, and all 10 were accounted for, 2 on her right ear, Borlan and Dorcray, and 8 on her left. Among the Thaeans, Dahlia had been given many nicknames, most alluding to a certain species of spider known for mating then eating the males, though not all of those diamonds on Dahlia's left ear represented males. Dahlia didn't murder her lovers, however. No, she challenged them to a fair fight, then utterly destroyed them. When Dorcray had entered his tryst with the elf, he'd known that, and was confident in his power to defeat her, should it come to that. In fact, he'd entertained the notion of not only defeating her, but had fantasized about converting her into a servile vampire. But he had come to know better. Dorcray had mentally played a fight with Dahlia in his mind 1,000 times. He had seen her training with Kozau's needle, and had witnessed 2 of the fights with her former lovers. And more than that, he had come to appreciate the elf warrior's cunning. He couldn't beat her, and he knew it. When Dahlia had had her fill of him, when she decided to move along for expediency, to make a point to Zaz Tam, or for simple boredom or whim, he would face oblivion.
"Your friend is here again,"
Valindra said, drawing Dorcray from his thoughts. He turned and looked at the doorway, expecting the lich referred to Dahlia. But seeing nothing there, he glanced back at Valindra, who redirected his attention to the empty skull gem, her own phylactery, which had come to serve Dorcray in an entirely different manner. The eyes of the gem flared red. Nervous, Dorcray glanced back at the door, and if he had any breath, he would have held it.
"She comes," he whispered to the spirit in the skull gem. "With our allies for the journey to the source of power."
The skull gem's eyes flared.
"Zaz Tam watches,"
a woman's voice replied, and it sounded tinny and thin through the magical conduit.
"He would not have this opportunity pass us by."
"I understand," Dorcray assured her.
"He will blame one, I will blame the other,"
the voice of Sylora assured him.
"I understand," Dorcray dutifully replied, and the flaming eyes went quiet.
Dahlia entered the chamber,
and as soon as Dorcray saw her, he noted the new ratio of her earrings, 9 to 1. Valindra, too, noted the entrance of Dahlia, but more because of the drow and dwarf that followed not far behind her. The lich gave a little hiss as Athrogate showed himself, but managed enough of her composure to wish Jarlaxle well.
"It has been too long, Jarlaxle," she said. "I am lonely."
"Too long indeed, dear lady, but my business has kept me away.